its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
That's not a problem. The station is actually just answered me. So I'd like somebody from the chat to tell me that they're hearing us right now. And I have Clint Richardson here. And he's the reason that I'm on air, because I listened to him for a long time. And he had a show with Tammy Pepperman. And I found Revolution Radio, Tammy Pepperman. And now I've got Clint Richardson on my show, which is very interesting. So what would you like to talk about today?
How about Tammy Pepperman? What's she up to? I haven't talked to her in a while.
She still does, like, she has a, well, she, we've got Bo and Rocco show on Revolution Radio, and she comes on with Bo, like, a lot. So we hear her, like, every other week or so on the radio.
She certainly always blows my mind. No matter how much I think I know, she always comes at me with just walls of stuff to look into.
Yes, and actually, you're the same way to me. It's like, you know, because of you, I me and my girlfriend, and I mean, my girlfriend was saying how she wants to say hello to you and stuff, and she thinks you're amazing, too. Like, she felt so bad when you said that you were going to do your last show on RBN. And I kind of felt that way, too. But, you know, I did message you and say that I understand that, you know, like, if you didn't get it by now, you know, like, you do have all of your archives and stuff, you know. And you really do need a break. You did, like, so many shows, like 5 shows a week and stuff for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, it was 5 shows a week for about 2 years. And it was 480-something shows or something like that. So, yeah, that should give people enough to ponder over, I think. I'd say I did my duty anyway, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the way I felt about it, too. You know, and the shows that you did were about, you know, like how words work and how there's spells on us and, you know, how the Black Law dictionaries work. And, you know, all the way back to the ones, you know, that were old and stuff. So you would, like, I remember looking through all different dictionaries to see what a word actually meant these days, you know.
Well, and you have to be careful because I suppose that's the most important distinction between knowledge and just pretty much illiteracy. Because, you know, they set up this language of English for our purpose, and the purpose was actually to create a language of illiteracy. And that's hard for a lot of people to accept. It's called dog Latin, and the reason they use the term dog is, well, pretty much the difference between a werewolf, which is a man with a wolf's head, which is what they used to call outlaws, has nothing to do with, you know, Hollywood versions of, or church versions of anything. They call people a werewolf. Were means man, and wolf meaning the head of the wolf. And that was what was referred to as an outlaw, someone who couldn't be controlled by the law, or a non-voluntarist, if you will. And then you have the dog, and we all know dog Latin. The reason they differentiate between a dog or a domestic animal and a wolf, which is a wild animal, is because the wolf hunts at night. The wolf is independent, self-sufficient, and you know, will fight to the death for his freedom, whereas the dog is domesticated, sleeps at night, gets fed by his master, and that's essentially where we are all at. And that's why they call it dog Latin, and that's why they call us beasts. We're all beasts, if you will. We're carrying the mark of the beast, which is our social security number and all the tokens of identity and everything else. And so, you know, you got this whole system based on the fact that we are in a human capital management system. Capita meaning head, by the head. So, yeah, I mean, you're taught what Black's Law 4th edition calls dog Latin, which is the English grammatical set, the Latin words transposed onto the English grammatical set. And we read the Bible, we read the law, we read all these different, sources without actually ever reading it. You got a Bible in every hotel room, you've got more Bibles than people on this earth, and yet nobody's actually reading the Bible, and they're not concerned that anybody's going to read it, because historically the priest class always kept the language, the Latin, to themselves, so that the people would only listen to the priests instead of ever reading the source of the of what the priests were talking about. And that way the priest class, or the scribes, or the Pharisees, or the money changers, or whatever, could always, basically lead the culture, use religion as an excuse, but never actually reveal what it means to be a religious man, as is written. So it's fascinating. And, you tell people this. You tell people, hey, you might be a professor. You might have a PhD in English. You might be the best speaker around there, maybe even the best writer. But you're writing in a language that at best makes you the most illiterate person. the most masterful writer of a language that's literally designed to make people illiterate. And that's disturbing for a lot of people who've written books, or who've got their degrees in their syndicalist education system and do a job based on the words. Now, the big difference that I want to make sure people understand is the difference between the etymological concept, or just the general random dictionary concept, or the college dictionary concept, and the terms of art. Because if you don't understand the difference between common language and the higher, or king's language, or legal language, whatever you want to call it, and you don't understand that each art form has a separate language. If I'm a botanist, I know a bunch of botany terms, and I can safely say that I am completely illiterate in botany. I wish I wasn't. I can safely say that I'm a very proficient in certain medical terms of art, because I had to study vaccines and all the medications, but I could never say that I'm any kind of expert, and I could certainly never say I am proficient in any other art form, be it some science or other technical thing that has their own terms, and they define what the terms mean. The problem is we're all acting legally, and we don't know what the legal terms mean. And I know that Revolution certainly talks about this a lot, but the importance to me is to be able to make the distinction that, when a cartoon is in a cartoon world, when a fiction is in a fictional realm, a jurisdiction, you must speak the language. When in Rome, and everywhere is Rome, you must speak Roman. Otherwise, you're illiterate. Again, you could be the most well-spoken person out there, but if you're acting as a legal person of the United States or any other nation, which they would call the people, the common people, or goyim, then you're illiterate. You're purposefully publicly minded, publicly educated, designed to be a public entity that supports the private people who created the country. It's really that's all there is to it. Now, from there, you go and you start learning the terms of art. You see that every word in the legal language is opposed to that which we say in the general or common language, and that's why every time we face a judge, we lose. We don't know the language.
Yes, I agree. And it's made up that way. Like English being the last language, they figured out the best way to fool us. Like they've tried all this time, like fixed all of their little mistakes, band-aided up all of the problems they had with us, and this is their best chance to like really confuse us as much as possible. And I want to introduce Heather Holdman here. She usually sits in with me and monitors the chat for questions and stuff. So, Heather, this is Clint Richardson. He's a big guest to have on. And if anybody has any questions for the chat, that would be awesome. I'm not going to be taking calls today, though. So, I want to give Clint as much time as possible.
Absolutely.
And his art. Go ahead, Heather. Say hi.
You're just saying hi. I was saying hi, and nice to meet you, Clint.
Greetings.
And I want to say that Clint's archives are in a few different places, and the one is at CorporationNationRadioArchives.wordpress.com, and there's about 400 or more shows there that you can hear of his. And I think you have a few more websites, don't you, Clint?
The websites I've had for a while, I keep my blog at realityblogger.wordpress.com. I keep my movies that I made quite some time ago, and hopefully we'll get back into at some point at thecorporationnation.com, or you can just search The Corporation Nation on YouTube, and it, you know, everything I do is free. So, and then my newest website, which I haven't really touched much, is strawmanstory.info, which is where I'm going to be giving away my book for free.
So, yeah, I can't wait to see that. And I'm the same way. I do everything for free because, you know, like, this is the world we're in now. It's like, you know, they played the money game, and when you realize it's a game and they change the rules all the time, you finally realize that you can't really play this game and win, you know. So it's time to change the game, you know, or you know, stop having games in life. It's time to actually enjoy life.
Stop playing games. It's and you know, I've seen several. After a while, you start You almost start taking the advice of your enemies, right? Like they look at you in such contempt. These people, because you're so illiterate. We're all so illiterate. I always include myself in all of this. So you know, I'm an equal opportunity offender here. There was this book that someone sent me. It was called Eugoyim. Eugoyim. He's like this really, really well-spoken Jew, and he's talking about us. He's saying, look, you fools, you know, everything you do is a game, and the word is sport, which in the legal parlance or the metaphorical parlance covers just about everything. Even war for us is a sport. Even the rules of war and the, you know, who we kill and who we capture, who we rape, who we torture, it's all a game. Everything's sport for us. And that was his big point, is that the fact that you people don't take anything seriously, you always have these ridiculous rules, that's why these guys always win, because they don't have those rules. And we allow them to infiltrate and to destroy us because we have these rules, this game that we play, this sport that says, well, you know, even when we go to court, it's these rules and this sport. And they feed on that. And they make so many rules that, of course, we can't possibly ever know them all. And that's, you know, that really helped me to overcome the notion that I read everything and I look at everything in a completely neutral capacity at this point. I don't look at it as good or evil, just as what it is. I look at the law exactly for what it is. I look at myself for exactly what I am. And unfortunately, that means I have to look at myself as, the Bible would call me a sinner. I would call myself a sellout, someone or a prostitute, or I can say I'm not a mercenary, but I certainly accept and act as Clint Richardson, a United States citizen, which I intend to solution here at some point, but not until I have all the knowledge that I can to make the right choice and follow the right path. So the point was that we are not serious. We're not a serious people. We play everything by sport. And if you think about that, and you think about our culture, it's true, man. Everything is a game to us. Everything is a sport. When we hunt, it's a sport. I mean, who the hell in their right mind would hunt for sport? But then that's the question. Who's in their right mind?
Yes, that's a good point. But, you know, it's not all our fault. It's what we've been taught all our lives. We really don't know the truth. You know, we've been kept from the truth in a way, you know, and that makes it a game in a way to kind of find, you know, where we're supposed to be in this world. You know, like when you read the Bible and you read a lot of different things, you kind of get confused a bit too, you know, like, and And I think the Bible is a great thing. But, you know, all of this knowledge that we're given, we're supposed to really find our own way through it. We're supposed to, like, connect with our inner self, our, like, creator or source that we come here with, you know, and stop paying attention to all these other things and actually, you know, feel the truth or find the truth in a different way. You know, because all this written stuff has been manipulated in a way, you know, to kind of test us. And it is kind of a big test, you know. And I really think it's about finding the other people in the world and seeing the value in each other and not the problems that they have because of the way we're taught.
Well, you use the notion of paying attention, right?
Yes.
we say these terms, we don't even think about what we're saying, right? If I'm paying something, I'm giving a tribute.
Yes.
And if I'm paying attention, well, then what am I doing? I'm respecting. This is what the Bible would say is, hey, don't respect persons, which is all corporations, all churches, all governments, all any person that is a corporation, including all citizens. Don't respect their flattering titles. Don't respect their oaths. Don't respect anything fictional about somebody. In other words, don't pay attention to their titles. Look at them as the natural sentient being they are and nothing else, and treat them as such. And, of course, the only thing the Bible really says to do is act in pure love and charity, which I found out is a very important aspect of being free from the legal world, because if you do act in pure charity and love, then you are actually considered as acting religiously. And guess what? That gives you sanctuary. The law has two functions to it. It has the law part, the rule, and the sanction. The sanction is the punishment. And the you know, people used to go to religious houses, which don't exist anymore because they're all incorporated, to seek sanctuary from the punishments of the law. But I'm sort of going, well, hey, you know, if you're acting in a purely spiritual, i.e., charitable manner, never expecting anything, especially money, but never expecting anything in return for anything you ever do, then that is the point when the state cannot touch you. That is the point where you are invisible. That's the point where you are so small and insignificant that you've overcome the fiction. You've overcome the greed and the earthly, fleshly things. And really, that's all the Bible is trying to tell people is, and it tells you in no unclear term, I mean, the very clearly, that you should not be a person or respect persons. You should not take flattering titles, you know, your doctor, your lawyer, whatever. You should not, and nor should you respect them. You should not take oaths of any manner. And when it says you should not have any gods before me, it's literally, I mean, to me, as I'm deciphering all these ciphered words through the concordances and through the Greek and Latin, you know, the lexicons, I'm finding that this thing, it nothing has ever made more sense to me. Now, before, 10 years ago when I read the Bible, I'm like, this is ridiculous. How can anybody read this crap? But now that I actually know what the words mean, and they're quite opposite, in fact, not even in the same ballpark as what I thought they meant before, because I only read it in dog Latin, but I'm not a dog anymore. I'm reading it in a sense that I actually can understand what the hell it's telling me and what it warned against. And it's simply saying, man, as soon as you fall into fiction, which man created, the heavens and the earth, the gods, the magistrates, the judges, man, as soon as you fall into fiction, this is what's going to happen. That's what the whole damn story is about. And it's so accurate. It so perfectly tells exactly how we live today. But you have to be able to read it, and therefore you have to know that higher language. Now, I call it higher because they call it higher. It's called the King's language because it's the King James Bible, which is the law, the ultimate foundational law of everything. It's called the legal language or legalese. It's called figurative instead of literal. I mean, it's called a lot of different things, and depending on your disposition, you'll want to call it whatever you whatever you want. But eventually you learn, hey, it's just words. They all mean the same thing. It's either public or private. It's either spiritual or non-spiritual, right?
Yes, and I wasn't saying anything bad about the Bible. The Bible is about how you feel when you read it. You should feel these words. You should realize what they're saying and stuff. And like you were saying, it's the language that they're written in, and it has been changed. And it's like, you know, you have to understand what you're reading, you know, like you have to really feel it. Like the, you know, the real answers come to you when you ask questions, you get answers to, you know, that just come to you, you know. So it's the same thing with reading. You're supposed to see.
It's the due diligence.
Yes.
It's the due diligence. If you're not looking at every word and seeing what the original word was, especially in the Hebrew or the Greek, the Latin, whatever, then you're not reading the Bible in any way, shape, or form. You're doing exactly what they, quote unquote, the priest class wants you to do, which is to trust in what they tell you it is, in the dog Latin, instead of taking into consideration that they are, and your judge and your attorney are still speaking in the original Latin terms or meanings of the words that they've basically corrupted for us.
Yeah, and that was the next thing I was going to say, is you don't let somebody interpret it for you, you know? And that's kind of what's going on here. We're all being led, and being followers, you really aren't putting in your due diligence, like you said, you know?
Well, it carries over also into these movements that we have, the Patriot Movement.
Yes.
And the Truth Movement, and, you know, you see all this this anger and this violence and this want for retribution and revenge, and you know, you go, and they, and of course the Bible is used constantly in the discourse that these people use, not knowing what the hell the Bible actually says, just what they've heard. And that probably bothers me most of all, because, you know, anybody can use the Bible, and or for that matter, a lot of other scripture just means ancient knowledge. So there's a lot of ancient knowledge out there. Right? So anybody can go and pick up a Bible, find a verse in the Bible, and say, look, God says I should do this. But then you go and you actually look. Okay, you have Elohim, you have Theos, you have all these different terms. That you have Jehovah, which is the only term that actually means anything spiritual, really. Jehovah is a verb. So God is actually, in the truest sense of the word, is a verb. It's not a personification. It's not an anthropomorphization. You know, think about that for a second. How what a incredible paradigm shift it is to think of God not as a noun, not as a person, place, or thing, not as a name,
action.
Not
yes.
as a man, but as everything that exists despite man, nature itself. It's like, I'm finding that above all the other pagan and other kind of religions, Christianity is actually the ultimate worship of nature. The only difference is it's worship of nature as a single god instead of a polytheist type of, well, the water's a god and the light sky's a god. And no, it's just one god, and you respect it as it is. And then there's all of man's designs and all of man's thoughts and inventions and fictions and everything else. And that's really, when you read it for what it's trying to tell you, it's trying to make you distinguish between reality, which it calls truth or faith in God or in reality or nature, and everything else, which is fiction, which is the fall of man into the concepts, as Tammy Pepperman taught me, you know, the tree of concepts, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the tree of being able to take the real thing and make it a fiction. And live by the fiction or the simulation, the simulacrum, instead of the real thing. And my God, it's been the most incredible journey for me. And this is kind of what I've been laying out in the book, is look, here's what it actually says. And here's the concordance that actually shows the original Greek or Hebrew word. And here's what it was, you know, and you find that, you know, again, as Tammy Pepperman taught me, thank God that God, as used in the Bible as the translated word, can mean Elohim, which is a plural word for gods or magistrates. It can mean Archon, which is a favorite word of people, which again, you know, last thing Christ said was, you're going to be ruled by archons until I return, which was gods or magistrates, judges, presidents, kings, popes, right? It's amazing. Amazing when you actually see what this thing actually says, and the only way you can do it is the language.
Yes, and I want to go back to something earlier that's like, you know, we're all equal here, you know? So it's funny that we give all these leaders some kind of, like, power over us and stuff when, you know, we're supposed to be walking in the same paths that they can, you know? Like, we're all supposed to be able to do anything that we see others do. Wow. And what you were saying about, you know, the creator is like a part of everything, you know, like it's not just one thing or this or that. It's everything. It's a part of us, you know, and we can be inspired by that thing that we come from, or we can be inspired by all the things that man has defined for us, you know. So it's this thing of confusion that we're getting from all of the man-made stuff saying, oh, this is so much. But then you start forgetting that there's a creator and nature and all these other things that were wondrous already that we're really here for. Like, we're supposed to have an adventure here that's like, you know, something great every day, something new, you know? And instead we're getting all of this confusion, and it seems like you don't learn anything every day like you're supposed to.
Well, what you're saying is, you believe it or not, is the same thing that sort of these people who have taken charge of being our masters and our principals, they say the same thing. You know, what's the first thing they say is, hey, all men are created equal, right? But that's just word magic. That's just a way of justifying everything that comes after. Because you always have to start. Everything starts with God. I don't care if it's Muslim or Jew or Christian or Buddhist, or it all starts with God. God is the ultimate power, the ultimate authority. When you look in the legal dictionaries, how do you know how important God is to the legal realm? Well, they recognize all accidents that are not of the human touch, in other words, not from the designs of man, are called an act of God. You can't deny what that means in the scheme that they're portraying. In other words, anything they can't control is an act of God. Natural, something that happens in nature, an earthquake, although that's, you know, earthquakes today, who knows. But you get the point. I mean, you know, I can't even say if it rains. That's how screwed up we've all become. But you know, I'm an accident. I'm an act of God. You're an act of God. Everything that comes into existence despite man is an act of God, a happy accident. Everything else then is fiction. So all men, sure, all men are created equal. But they only say that because the second thing they say is all persons are not created equal. All men have unalienable rights, but they can also be inalienable, meaning they can be sold if you enter into contract, right? So all statuses, in other words, persons of men, and not all men are persons, as the maxim goes, but all persons are men. You don't have that equality, that natural equality. Once you enter into a political realm, anything goes.
Yes, and that's kind of what I was saying, is like, we come here, we're all equal, and we really do have all of the possibilities, but, you know, the way we're defined here and the way we pick on each other and things, you know, like, we never realize our possibilities and what's really possible here. You know, like, the other thing is that, you know, like, I believe that you live forever and that, you know, you die once to realize the value of living forever. And I kind of think all of this stuff is just a lesson so that we, you know, find out how to get along with each other and stuff. So I don't see it as bad as it looks, you know.
Well, like, it does seem like a test, doesn't it?
Yes.
And you know, the Bible makes it sound very much like a test. The law makes it sound very much like a test. The judges, the people that I've talked to who, say, introduced the Bible as their law into the registrar's office, especially up there in Canada, the people treat them like, oh, you've passed the test. They treat you, all of a sudden treat you with respect. People who've gone private instead of public, have, it's like you're passing a test. And what's amazing about that is, you know, there's this sort of alternative mythology out there that, ooh, if you talk about this stuff, you're going to get killed. Well, I don't think that's the case. I actually kind of think of it in the way that people think of the devil. The devil can only operate through contract. He can't affect you any other way, right? It always has to be through contract, through words, in other words. And so, yes. So I kind of look at these people as the agents of the devilish system. I mean, they call lawyers or barristers in England and Scotland, and they call them devils, devil masters. That's not anything deviling is in the legal dictionary. It's being a devil's advocate. All these words are very, very much realistic, literal terms for attorneys and agents of any sort. So any agency of government or any agent thereof is literally the devil. And that's not, you know, that's a neutral term. It just means someone who is adversarial to, you know, the word Satan just means adversarial to nature, adversarial to reality, adversarial to life, or adversarial to God or God's law. That's all it means, man. You just don't take it any further. Don't go down the church route or the Hollywood route, which are the same thing. You know, just take it for what it is and say, hey, I'm in a constant battle where the devil, like sort of in the Matrix where Agent Smith appears everywhere, right? Wherever you're found, you know, the devil is right there to try to contract with you. And that's the only way they have that he has power over you. He, again, that's an anthropomorphization. I use he just absolutely loosely.
Yes.
So, you know, it's that notion. So you think about that, and again, I know that people on this station know that contract is everything. And, you know, in my research, I found, you know, people are always saying, you know, you can sue for damages, you can do all this stuff, but actually that would be the case of a tort. Unfortunately, as public citizens, people who are of the United States instead of one of the private, you know, citizens of each state, or a religious man for that matter, there's no tort because the contract makes the law is the maximum. So the notion of a tort can only apply to an actual injury, to an actual man or his property. But when you're talking about a contractual relationship where a persona or a status is created, like U.S. citizenship, we don't qualify for the torts, the tort laws, and all of that stuff. We're at contract defeats most of the things that we're always constantly bickering about and saying that our rights are being reviewed. We don't have those rights. All men are created equal. Want to know why that is? It's because people who are private and not citizens under the people or of the United States, they've reserved all their rights. The only way you qualify for the negative or protective aspects of the Constitution, which we're not a party to, the only way you qualify for that is in a negative state, in a state where you have reserved all right. Hey, guess what? Each one of us, if I'm in Utah, I'm an alien here. See, I don't anymore deny it. I just say what I am. I don't question it anymore. I want to change it, of course. But I'm an alien. I'm an alien friend. I'm not trying to get rid of government. I'd like for people to leave it. I'd like for people to walk away for it and settle as peaceful inhabitants somewhere, religious people, whatever, in a monastery, whatever. We'll see. But I'm not its enemy. Although it could label me as that if it wanted to, but there's alien friend and alien enemy. I'm an alien because I'm only a temporary resident wherever, whichever state I live in. My domicile, my home, my father, my family, the arms that I bear, which is the blood or heraldry, is the United States, period, end of story. Until I change that, I have to act the part that I'm assigned. I'd be a fool to try to talk to a police officer as we always talk about, or try to go up against the government or try to go against the law that I'm bound to follow as I act in its persona, its status, I'd be a fool to try to challenge the implication that I'm protected under the law and therefore I have all the obligations, you know, all the benefits and obligations. We have to face the fact that we've been conned, we've been duped, we've been put under a system of illiteracy. We can come out of it, like you said, it's a test, man, but we have to start acting our part. Hey, you're a United States citizen, you better look at the United States law. You better look at the color of law statutes. You better look at all the federal stuff instead of the state stuff, because the state stuff is all subordinate to the federal laws. If you're a United States citizen, you might as well start acting the part and actually using the law that bars the state law in its commercial capacity from affecting you as a commercial entity. See,
that,
this is the thing.
That, Mr. Richardson, that is a perfect opportunity. We have a question from chat, and if you don't mind, I can ask it, and you can answer
sure.
it. Okay, ask if your guest, he called himself a United States citizen. If so, he cannot use the Bill of Rights. If he can, then he can explain how a United States citizen did not come until after the Civil War. Thanks. Not really sure how to interpret that.
Well, so again, the Bill of Rights really mean nothing to anybody except as a bar for what government can do to private citizens. A United States citizen is not in any way, shape, or form a private citizen. One of our problems is we try to act privately while being public. We go to public school. We have a public name or a surname of the United States. We have a Social Security number. We have driver's licenses. And we have those things because we are United States citizens, not state citizens. There's several places that I've uncovered that says if you are a United States citizen, you are not a citizen of any state. It's a district.
Okay. That makes
right?
sense.
So,
yeah.
Right. So the Bill of Rights, you know, in the if you read the preamble to the Constitution, it says this document, this thing we're creating, this United States. You know, you have the founding fathers who were the agents of the private people of each state, all right? They're essentially attorneys, if you will. Agent and attorney are the same. The private people as a body politic got together, created a compact to protect each other, and they put a bunch of negative averments or negative rights, if you will, which is a duty of whoever is bound by it to never do those things. So you have the Second Amendment. It says you have the right to bear arms, right? Now, through dog Latin, through the language of illiteracy, we think arms means guns. It has nothing to do with guns. Although you can call guns arms, the word arms was a specific reference to coat of arms or heraldry, bloodline. And so what does it say in there? It says we the people. People is capitalized, meaning it's a specific body politic of private persons who are getting together and creating a corporation. And let's face it, to the asker of the question, let me ask you a question. If you were to start a corporation right now, if you were to start a trust or a college fund or whatever it is that you're going to start, any kind of corporation, who would you be starting it for? Would it be every single person in the world or every single person around you? Or would it be for your specific blood, your family, your children, your posterity, which is how it's labeled in the preamble to the Constitution? What's the Constitution for? This Constitution, we the people create this Constitution for ourselves, us as a body politic, on only us, and our posterity, our bloodline. How do I know if I'm one of the bloodline? I have to bear my arms, my heraldry. And I go look up the word arms, you're going to find that in the vulgar sense, in other words, the dog Latin sense, it means guns. But in to the Queen and to the Pope and to these private people who are all part of the same family, the same blood, the word arms has a very, very different meaning, and you can find all kinds of treatises on arms being, you know, the heraldry, as in, so why is it important that these private people are always guaranteed the negative right, meaning the government can never change this, always guaranteed the right to bear arms, because that's the only way they can remain in their little club and say, look, my great-granddaddy was George Washington, who, of course, his great-granddaddy was King John of England. Right? I mean, they're all related. All the private landholders are related. They're the only ones that can hold land because it's their corporation. It's their creation, not ours. So the question then was, a United Citizen created with the 14th Amendment? No, not at all. Well, I wouldn't say no. A new form or a new style of United States citizen was created. It created that sort of domicile that we all participate in. But before that, you had slaves, you had indentured servants, you had all sorts of different people that were, you know, the Chinese, the Japanese, the Irish, and all these people that were flooded over here for the same reason that some of our people went over to Iraq and work on the oil fields, for the same reason that some of our people go up to either Canada or some other place to get some job because the job's not available here. Same reason our boys join the military, to guard their own damn families against each other. You see, there were so many people here that were not part of the bloodline, of the posterity of those founding fathers and those who they represented as attorneys or agents. So the United States itself as a district is just a – it's like a holding company for persons, for sub-corporations or for franchises. And the word free means franchise. Word freedom means dominion over your franchise. And so I have freedom, but it's political freedom, which means I have a franchise. I'm born, if you will, a felon. I have my parents abandoned me. I become a ward of the state, but instead of putting me in prison, I get my freedom. I'm denizened or incorporated or franchised into their commercial structure. The state then create a state government. The word state in its capitalized form, kind of like people was capitalized, well, the word state, when it's capitalized, means people, private people. They create the lowercase or state, which is a legal corporate government under the law of nations or international maritime law. And all the United States citizens are then granted temporary residence. They don't call us a domicile. They call us a resident. In whatever state we live in, we're there purely for a commercial purpose. We have permission to be there or license to be there, even though we're not part of their private, you know, we have no land. We cannot be landholders. It's their club. Only they can be the landholders. Therefore, only they can elect president, and only they can be electors and all that. So we are refugees. We've been made refugees, just like all these other people who are being made refugees across the world so that they can be biometrically put under the mark of the beast system, if you will, given biometric readings and given an identity. And if you look at the United Nations, you'll see they're very concerned that 1.5 billion people don't have identities, legal identities. And in order to get benefits, you have to have a legal identity, right? So it I don't know if I've answered this question correctly, but he said, think of a black person, right? You have a slave, someone with no actual quote-unquote political rights. They have civil rights, if you will, but not necessarily political rights. And you have all these white guys or quote-unquote white persons, which has nothing to do with skin color, by the way. But you have these white persons who have these benefits that these black people don't. And they're going and they're hanging these guys from a tree. They're beating them up. They're stopping them from voting. They're doing all kinds of things. And then 14th Amendment comes along. And all of a sudden, what happens to the black person the status of the guy who before had no political or civil rights, very few anyway, that would protect him from being literally killed or lynched. Well, he got a piece of property. He became shorty and bound for a United States citizen. So now all of a sudden you have the same black guy. Nothing's changed about him except his status. He's suddenly a United States citizen according to the 14th Amendment. Now what happens? And this is the difference between the 14th Amendment and what was before it. Is that the black person now, as a United States citizen, quote unquote, as, in other words, as property of government, now if I harm the property of government, which is the citizenship in commerce, which you could say I am harming the potential human capital labor, you know, future labor potential or money-making ability of or taxable ability of this guy, all of a sudden now the black guy has some protection because now the government's not going to get their cut from the work of that slave who's now called a citizen. You see, that's the difference. Before, if I wasn't a United States citizen, quote-unquote, I had no protections. But now that I'm acting as property of the United States in different form, what we call voluntary servitude or voluntary slavery, now if I go beat that guy up, now that guy has the capacity to sue and to have all the protections and the equal rights, as they call them, of white persons. It's just a matter of basically becoming property as opposed to being a full-fledged slave. That's all the difference, or an indentured servant. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense when you think about if you were outside of this system and you was to hurt somebody that was in the system, the whole force of this system would come down on you.
Sure.
You know, because you're damaging one of their products or their pieces of work that they can use, you know.
Yeah. If you step back, You release all of your beliefs and all of your opinions of how things should be and or could be or how you want them to be, and you just focus on how things actually are without any of your own personal, you know, interests or beliefs or whatever, all of a sudden things make so much sense because you can actually put yourself in the purview or in the eyes of the slaveholder or the landholder, and you can start to understand your place in this society. And your place as a United States citizen is simply as a taxable commodity in commerce.
Right, and we hear this all the time, and we're kind of fighting something that is huge. And really, what is the solution to all this? This is what we really need to figure out, you know, like how we can either all have a say in it, you know, because all they really did was make us all equal to the slave in a way, you know. And you hear this all the time, you know, like we're under maritime law, you know, we're bumping into each other and causing all kinds of, you know, situations that we go to court for and stuff. And we're all under paperwork, you know, which is really not the truth, you know, like we're not really alive when we're, you know, being just a piece of paper to them.
Well, you know? So two things, man. We can call it a lie all we want, and we can be passionate, and we can get emotionally charged, and we can do all that. But we also have to realize everything legal is a lie. You know, you get a license to do something, it's a lie. Your name is a lie. Your Social Security number, it's all a lie. The question is whether you're accepting or paying attention or respecting or what the proper term, though, is confirmation and ratification. These are the two most important words. The United States was ratified or confirmed by the states. The lie was put into place, the district, which means seizure, distress, distraint. Okay, that lie, that is the District of Columbia, was put into place because the states confirmed and ratified the Constitution. Well, same thing that happens to us. Now, we get a birth certificate. And the birth certificate has nothing to do with us, right? My parents, they filled out a form. They went through the delivery process or delivery. They abandoned me to the state or at least on paper, right? It's all a lie, so it doesn't really mean anything. Until as I get older, and my parents have indoctrinated me, the public schools have indoctrinated me into getting a bank account, my first bank account, yay, my first credit card. Oh, look, I'm going to get a Social Security card. Ooh, look, I get to register for Selective Service. Ooh, why would I want to do that? But okay. I start signing my name. I start using benefits that are attached to the name and the number and all the marks and the signs. And all of a sudden, by my actions, I'm subsuming. I am subsisting not as a natural, beautiful gift from God, but as Clint Richardson. Oh, God, how did this all happen? Well, I did it all myself. I was induced, of course. Even love is an inducement to contract to marriage, according to them, right? So, yeah, this is the confirmation process. Same confirmation process that happens when you become a member of a church. You get baptized, you go through catechism, you do all that crap, and you become a member of a false religion, right? You're not following the Bible, you're following your priest or your president or whatever prophet it is that's running your church. So you're confirming. And this is where people get confused, because they say, well, I never signed a contract that said I'm a United States citizen. No, folks, you're acting the part. You've been acting the part since you had the age of consent. You were acting the part before that when your parents had your consent in their responsibility. You see, that's the thing, man. That is an expression or an express consent. And because you're acting the part, because you're taking the benefits of the person that was created, the legal entity that was created at birth, you're confirming the notion that you're a surety, you're standing in surety, you're ensuring that the appearance of that person will be met in court when the agent is summoned. You're technically the registered agent for service of process. You control the person, which is the status of the United States, which we call volunteerism, which is the doctrine of master and servant. So your person is the servant of the master. You're the agent running the servant, and the principal is the United States. The state you live in is the third party. That's the law of agents.
Yes, I hate to interrupt. A couple minutes for a break, and then we'll be back. This is a great show, Clint. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
So hello, everyone out there in listener land. This is Tony on Why Not Do What You Can. And we have Clint Richardson with us today, which is like one of the best guests that I can get. And we've been covering a lot of stuff. And I feel bad that I'm letting him talk the whole show. I hope his voice is going to hold out for the next hour. But I really appreciate it, Clint. You're really great.
I'll tell you what. Like I said, I've been writing this. I don't like to call it a book and a big long story, but I have this work. It's over 2,000 pages, and it's, you know, I'm going fast. I'm saying things that are you know, way too quick to be comprehended. But all of this is explained in that work. The first 1,000 pages of which will be released here pretty soon in the next month or two, and again, it'll be free. And I'll be doing hard copies if people want to actually do a donation type of thing. A gift is actually the correct term. Pure and simple gift is the correct legal term to make sure that they can't come and demand taxation and all that crap. But I, if you don't mind, I hate to make it sound like there's this evil grand a bunch of people who are all like-minded and, you know, perfectly like-minded and who control all the land. It's sort of that way. I mean, it's a conspiracy people look for individual conspiracies, but actually the word conspiracy and confederation, if you look up, are the same exact words. So again, this bloodline got together, created a corporation, created a compact between themselves, and that was the conspiracy. So there is no conspiracy coming from them. The only conspiracy would be against them. And that's why we can never name anything as a conspiracy, Because, yeah, that happened long ago. You're in the middle of the conspiracy, and you're participating, you're confirming, you're ratifying, and you're consenting to it by your actions. But I wanted to read Horace Greeley, one of my favorite quotes comes from this guy. Two of my favorite quotes. First of all, he says, he was the founding editor of the New Yorker, the New York Tribune newspapers, and he was very much opposed to Lincoln. For that matter, anybody that was pro-slavery, which Lincoln actually was, despite history. It is impossible to enslave, mentally or socially, a Bible-reading people. The principles of the Bible are the groundwork of human freedom. Now, when he's saying the principles, he's saying the maxims of law, the principles of the law, the very foundation of all principles of law, which is that all men are created equal, et cetera, come from the Bible. They even have scriptural references when they are specifically from Scripture. So you have to understand first that the principles, maxims of law, the ones that are more negatively protective of, you know, as long as you're doing your duty, there's no reason that the law should interfere with you, that type of thing, do no harm, as they call it. That's the principles of law. And so you have to know those, and you really have to know they come from the Bible, and that's really what he was sort of referring to. So again, mentally or socially, a Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. And I'm going to say, I'm going to verify that since I've been reading the Bible pretty much straight for 2 years and deciphering every word, I'm going to concur with that wholly, because it lays out their whole plan, and it tells you every trick in the book that they use, and it warns you, right? So the other one is, Lincoln, President Lincoln said some very interesting things that don't make the public, you know, one of those being my paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union, and is not either to save or to destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would. I'm only interested in the Union because, yeah, man, it's their corporation. They want to keep their power. You don't give a crap about slaves, right? So Horace Greeley, when he went against Lincoln, was like, hey, again, he was speaking on what was called then post-Civil War citizenship. We call it 14th Amendment citizenship. I want people to listen to this. I want people to look it up and really read it for themselves, because this is one of the most beautifully stated truisms I've ever heard. He says, we have stricken, and it's what I was trying to get at earlier, we have stricken, so you have the pre-14th Amendment citizens, if you will, probably not the right word, inhabitants that weren't private, and you have the post-14th Amendment citizen. We have stricken the slave shackles from 4 million human beings. Now, are you going to tell me that there were no people that resembled United States citizens if there were 4 million human beings that were and plus all laborers? So listen again. We have stricken the slave shackles from 4 million human beings and brought all laborers to a common level, not so much by the elevation of former slaves as by practically reducing the whole working population, white and black, to a condition of serfdom. While boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by an inequitous money system, we have nationalized a system of oppression which, though more refined, is not less cruel than the old system of chattel slavery. Okay, so here's one of the private guys, man, one of the good guys amongst the bad guys, the private landholders, saying, look, we just took all the slaves and all of the laborers, which were white persons, you know, your Italians and your Jews and your Irish and all that, and we didn't elevate the slaves, we lowered the status of the indentured or the laborers, the free laborers. We put them down and we quote-unquote equalized the laborers and the slaves, but not because we raised the status of the slave, because we lowered the status of everybody else. That's you and me. That's all of us U.S. citizens, all of us quote-unquote human capital, all of us chattel laborers out here. And they created the 14th Amendment citizen, which made everybody quote-unquote, you know, as we say, equal, which is a big, you know, fat fallacy, essentially. So
yeah, because it didn't include them, the ones that are making all of these rules. So that's kind of the question. Is it possible, like, that these people that, you know, they never have to work or do anything in their life, and they're living off of the work of us, you know? Like, how is it possible to, you know, really make us all equal? That's really where the problem is.
Well, that quality, if you will, under God, never left us.
Right.
We are what we make ourselves. So don't ever think that these guys are forcing us to do anything, because again, this system is purely voluntary. That's hard for people to digest. It's hard because they think of the term in their own etymology or their own personal opinion of what that word means. But in law, again, volunteerism is the doctrine of master and servant. That is the reality of the legal fiction, which is an oxymoron. So you've never lost anything in God's purview, if you will, under the natural law, under, you know, they say God is always with you, no matter how corrupt, it's always standing next to you, etc. If you think about that in its real, literal capacity, it means that you know, only your status, only what you've accepted as a status, only your consent to this alternative law other than the natural or God's law is what makes you unequal. It puts you into a status. So any status is going to point to inequality or inequity. That's the point of status. Otherwise it wouldn't exist. Right? So the notion that you have to do something on the highest spectrum, or in other words, the spiritual spectrum, you don't have to change a darn thing about reality, about your nature, about who and what you are. You have to fix all of the statuses and all the contracts. You have to get rid of all of those things. And you asked earlier, is there a remedy? Is there a solution? Right? And you know, one of my favorite things to tell people to really switch their paradigm around is the difference between those two words. You've got a bunch of gurus, you know, some on this station, some on my station, my former station, some in the mainstream, some in the other alternative, some independent. Doesn't matter. They're all gurus telling you that you can have remedy in this way. Right? And remedy is very, very important in the aspect of the legal system, but I tell you that the only quote unquote person or status of a man that would seek remedy is a slave.
Yes.
Okay. Solution is the word you should be focusing on if you actually want to be free. Most people are happy to be slaves, or excuse me, volunteerists.
Yes.
If you look up solution, not etymologically, but legally, you'll find that it means one and only one thing: satisfaction of debt or end of contract. Okay, United States debt, as we view it, we always say, "Oh, the debt is this many trillion and this many," which doesn't even exist, right?
Right.
So we're not in debt that way. We're in what's called a performance debt. So when you're talking about a solution or an end to debt, the only way you're going to get out of a performance debt, which is what the bond and surety to citizenship is, if I'm acting, if I rent a car, then I'm bound to act according to the law revolving around that vessel, that ship, that thing that I'm driving in commerce. Same thing with a citizenship. If I'm operating commercially in a United States citizenship, a vessel, a conveyance that allows me to interact with this third party state government as I'm on behalf of my principal, the United States, me acting as agent, well, then I'm obligated to follow the law of that vessel, because my confirmation of it, my ratification of the fact that I'm going by that name, using its benefits, using its Social Security number, and all the perks, the benefits, the protections, the insurances, the consumer protections, and all of that stuff, all that's implied, I have to follow the law. I have to take all the obligations with all the benefits, and there's no exceptions, I'm sorry, no matter what any guru tells you. Now, you might be able to get a remedy, which means you'll get a monetary compensation. So basically, Mammon will give you a little bonus for seeking remedy. And you might not get the life that was lost back. You might not get the property that was lost back, but you'll get some money, which doesn't really even exist. Yes. Right? So solution, there's only one solution. All these radio shows, okay, we're going to spend an hour and a half. Well, no, we're going to spend an hour with the guest. Then we're going to take calls for a half an hour, and then we're going to talk about solutions. And I just want to hold a gun up and shoot these people, because solution means one and only one thing: end of contract, end of debt, or satisfaction of debt, end of contract. In other words, discharge. No more charge. They can't positively charge you with crime or citizenship or anything else. You become negative. You're no longer in a contractual relationship. At that point, then you can start acting privately. Then you can focus on, if you want to become a landholder, you can do that. You can prove your genealogy. You can do all that stuff. You can become a religious man. Personally, I want to start a monastery and invite people to be religious with me in pure charity. All kinds of things you can do at that point. But until then, as long as you're confirming and acting as a United States citizen, getting any kind of benefit whatsoever, invoking the police, doing any of that stuff, well, then you're a United States citizen. That's the implication. That's what's going to happen, because you're expressing it through your actions. And again, there's no written contract. There doesn't have to be. The law says there doesn't have to be. You've agreed to the law. You're acting the part. Therefore, it's implied that you are willing and capable and have the legal capacity and the sanity to follow the law. So the difference between those two words, remedy and solution. Remedy is, I don't want to offend, because it's a very legitimate part of a very illegitimate legal system. Remedy, if something happens to you, you seek remedy. That's fine, right? You get monetary compensation. But if you want to be free, man, forget remedy. Money ain't freedom. Money is debt, no matter how wealthy you are. Yes. Right? You need solution, and there's only one solution. That's my spiel on solution.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I think, every time it happens like this, that we get so, in the wrong direction and things, with the system being overwhelming, the solution or the way is to usually just walk away from it and stop participating, because you start to think that you're doing the wrong thing to try and band-aid up something that is so, cruel and in the wrong direction. You're never getting anywhere if you keep playing in this game,
No. Again, it's sport, man.
Yes. So, I mean, the soldiers in the war, if they weren't there, the king wouldn't have anyone to play with and there wouldn't be a war. So, it's all part us too, but you got to wonder, playing all of this situation that they've made up for us, is that really the right thing to be in life? I kind of feel like we're against each other, and it is like a big human race, and that means competition, and nobody's really going to win this one.
And see, there again, man, in charity, is there competition to be more charitable? I mean, what's the competition, right? Like, yeah. Where, how could you possibly, like, fail at charity unless you don't do it or you expect something in return? And, you know, I'm not just saying that.
No, you're right.
Just to be, sound cool. I mean, that's actually the law. The law, even in the commercial codes and even it literally defines, you know, the reason I'm not publishing my book, why you can't find it on Amazon or anywhere else but from me, is because publish means to make public. In other words, to give it to government through a government person, to give it your work and let it have it as its property, and then it'll give you some benefits. You can sell it and use it, but you never own it. And that's what was the same thing with a house, same thing with a car. You don't own anything. Government does through your person, your estate. And that estate, of course, belongs to government. And the way you know that that's the case is because we have to actually do a will at the end of our lives to leave stuff to our children, which we abandoned at birth. Right? I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. The law says, hey, an heir is obvious. All you need to do, blood is everything in law. All you got to do is prove blood in law, and the heirship is obvious. It doesn't need to be proven in any way, shape, or form. No will or testament is needed. It just happens. It's natural. But you see, we're in a state of corruption of blood, which, again, you can look up these terms, corruption of blood or attainder, which the Constitution, again, says no attainder, but that's for them, not us. Because if you attainted or corrupted or tainted the blood of the private people, well, then they'd have nothing to prove that they are the private people. So you can taint the blood of all the slaves and all the indentured servants, but the Constitution says no bill of attainder, etc., will be passed. But that's only when you've reserved all your rights, man. A U.S. citizenship has no blood. Your father is the people or the state. You don't have a blood inheritance. You're not an heir. In the Bible, they referenced the wheat and the tares. The tares that look like wheat, but they bear no seed. They're false. They're like a weed. They're the cattle. They have no purpose. They have no land. Their seed or their children are again worthless. Only good for feed, basically. And so you have the wheat and the tares, and in the end, the tares always get burned.
Well, you're being used. You know, like when I work for somebody, they get me to do what they want, and I never get to what I want in life, you know. So it's about being used. And now they're coming out with, like, 55% inheritance tax. So, you know, like, you have to, like, get your inheritance back off of the state. They own it now, you know. So.
Well, see, and that's the trick, is that they always owned it.
Yes.
Right? You were in usufruct. You had the right to use and enjoy the property, but you never held a perfect allodial or whatever word you want to use, a non-defective title, a perfect title. You never had that, and so it reverts. It always reverts back to the state once you're done using. Again, that's why you need a will to tell the state, hey, here, I'm going to pay you 55%, but please give it back to my children. And then, of course, the children are like, well, thanks. Now I've got a debt. I'm going to have to sell the property just to pay the tax and stay against the property anyway, or someone else does. So this is called escheat. One of the most important words I uncovered was escheat. In fact, it's like the climax of the first part of my book is this word escheat. And we have escheat laws. It's basically feudalism. ES and the word cheat. If you look up the word cheat, it means exactly what you'd think it means. And then you put the ES escheat, which were used to be the king's officers of escheat, and it's essentially the reversion of property always to the state. We have inheritance type of laws with all kinds of property. So if property goes unclaimed, it goes into escheat and it goes back to the state. You got to know that anything that goes to the federal government is always being held on behalf of whatever private state. California, which is the people of California, or the people of Utah, the people of New York. That is what the United States is holding things for. It holds all the lands, the BLM lands, right? It's holding those lands until a private person, a private citizen of a state, actually comes and either purchases, which means conquer, or inheritance, or in some other way inherits or gets that land by law, not necessarily by purchase. So, again, eschat, everything reverts back to the state, and they've put us into this state of citizenship or usufruct, where we're just users or tenants, never the landholders. We have no land of our own. We have no place to walk to, in other words, because it's all owned. The whole system that we're partaking in is yes, of the private landholders, and the United States is specifically their sort of holding corporation for all the assets and everything that belong to the states. And that's how it works, man. It's that. It's all laid out. It's all laid out in the legal dictionaries, and if you study them long enough, like I have, then the story unfolds. And again, that's kind of what I'm doing with it, is I'm making this sort of encyclopedic journey through the legal dictionaries to explain how all this works. It's the only way you can do it is to – it's kind of like the Bible. You just got to keep reading the words until they all start – you realize it's all one big giant sentence. As yes, as above, so below, man. Each legal word above means, you know, it's connected to the one below.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, too, how it works with the words like that in the dictionary. But it's an interesting thing because, you know, like there is no real solution, and they do own everything, including you. And you do still have choice. So, you know, like you would think, you know, maybe people would get it that maybe you should just go enjoy life, you know, instead of trying to fight this thing or to think that you're going to change something like that. I mean, until they allow us all to vote together and really make a choice on what the rules are that we're going to follow, what can we do?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you, is that it's not their choice. It's your choice. And your choice is going to either be a good little citizen and go get a job, you know, go compete and get the highest paying job, and on weekends go take off and do some rock climbing or whatever it is that floats your boat, or get a prostitute, whatever, you know, whatever it is. Or you make the choice to not participate in any of it and become purely a private or spiritual entity, and you go from there. Now most people, I'm very, very displeased to say that, again, what does the Bible say? It says most, I'm paraphrasing, it says most people won't choose that path. Most people will not go down that path, and the rich man will certainly never enter into the kingdom of heaven. So, and that kingdom is here on, it's life, it's not afterlife, it's now. Afterlife is a reference to after civil or dead life. We call the civil life or the citizenship a dead, you know, it's why you get a mort gage, a dead pledge, or a mort main, dead hands, all these terms. You're dead, you're spiritually dead while you're a citizen. You either spiritually awaken and have solution, which means end of all contracts that cause spiritual death, or you embrace spiritual death and live in hell, which the Black's Law defines as the debtor's prison under the executor.
Yes, but it makes a lot of sense because you're kind of selling yourself out by going after all of these special things of who's better than who and how much you have. You know, you're accumulating all of these things which put you in the place of, you know, the rich man's not going to find heaven because all he believes in is the possessions and the materialism of the earth. You know, so...
Yeah, and specifically when the Bible says that, it talks about riches or mammon, it specifically means, according to the concordances and lexicons, that it doesn't mean wealth in general. It means wealth or riches that are opposed to God. And when it says opposed to God, it means nature. It means creation. It means the spiritual life of man.
It means
opposed to charity, opposed to love, opposed to all the good things.
Well, knowledge, too, because, you know, like what you're learning here is that, you know, the game that they play and, the, you know, going against each other really isn't a way of like a higher heaven, because you're supposed to be getting along with each other and helping each other. So knowledge, you could be out like giving help to everyone, things that you can do, you can share with others so they can do them. And you know, that's more of a value than all of the money in the world, being happy and realizing how to make others happy, you know, and that's where you would get to a higher place.
Yeah, that's, again, you know, this is why I know a lot of people would certainly take the leap if, the leap of faith, if you will, and faith just means truth, and the highest truth, of course, is reality or nature, what exists despite man.
Yes.
Including man, but my opinion is that people really feel they have no place to go, and I think that's a fairly true statement when it comes to your legal entity acting in a capacity where, you know, what do I do if I can't use or refuse to use or respect money, titles, employment, which just means to be used. You know, all these different aspects of life that we're so accustomed to and have been naturalized and are put into nativity, which means to be captured. That's the nation we're born in. What do we do without all of those things, those concepts, those, you know, again, the tree of good and evil? What do we do without the fruit, without the fig? Well, you know, and this is my ultimate fantasy, is to actually start a monastery, the old school, like, realistic monastery that is not tied to any specific quote-unquote corporation as a religion, but as a true, pure charity, pure, you know, whatever the correct terms are. And I see it all over the law that the only people that are safe, if you will, or that abjure the realm, means abjure, means to get away from law. Injure is to bring into law. Abjure is to release from law, if you will. Mm-hmm. The only people I see that are, you're either a convicted criminal and put in prison where you lose your rights, or you abjure the realm by entering into a monastery. Those are the two real ways of losing your religion, if you will. Losing your statehood, your personhood, you're actually becoming a spiritual. Now I'm not going to say everybody should become a quote unquote monk and get a bowl haircut and wear a potato sack. But what I would like to do is create a place, a space where people can actually go. And then once that place is created and everybody's acting like we're talking about right now, Tony, yes. I mean, we want it to happen, but we have no place to do it. Right. Because everything has to be tax deductible, well, then maybe we can, to use, for lack of a better term, we can start franchising out the monasteries, not for profit, but teaching people how to turn the land back into a religious experience, a verb, if you will, not a noun. And when I say that, I mean, I truly, truly want people to know this has nothing to do with religion. Right. In the capacity that we understand it and that we're used to as corporations and all the Pope and all that crap. No, this, when you look at law and you understand what the Bible says, you understand, which is the principles of law, and you understand how the legal, you know, even the Constitution says that, it, you know, the legal authorities, the government cannot respect religion. So, in other words, it can't even see you. I mean, if you were to act in pure charity, government would be like, damn it, I can't touch this guy. He's not using my money. He's not doing anything and expecting anything in return. Therefore, he needs no insurance. What the hell are we going to do with this guy? Well, we're just going to have to not respect him. And, you know, all the religions are incorporated under government. And so government respects them and tells them what to do. And so they're all not actually acting religiously. And again, this is the difference between religion in name only, or noun, a person, place, or thing, a proper name, or the verb, the Jehovah, the actual permanent being of all of nature, of reality, and actually acting only in that truth. Yeah, you have the truth movement. You have 9/11 truth. No. That's not truth. Okay? Truth is simply what reality is and living in it, and that's God, essentially.
Yes, and this is the thing. It's like we were taught, we weren't taught how to live on our own, how to understand how all of nature works and to see where the food is and where the water is and how to, you know, be living without, like, being under control of something that gives us grocery stores and everything simple for us, you know? And because we weren't taught any of this, when we get into a situation that we're in the world right now, you know, nobody's ready to walk away from it. They're all, you know, praising this system that, you know, like, it's the way it works right now. You know, nobody can understand that there was something here to begin with that was so much better. You know, but, you know, man came up with this, you know, it's better than nature, you know, it's more comfortable and stuff. Well, that comfort kind of took you away from all of the possibilities you really have.
Well, I like to put it this way for people, and sometimes this helps, especially with parents. Sometimes this helps people really, truly grasp what has happened to us, because we live in essentially a pirate cove. The United States is basically a bunch of pirates. I should say the private people are a bunch of pirates, and they operate the dread pirate ship United States in Admiralty, everything's on the sea of commerce and all that crap that you hear all the time, you know? So what has happened is that, you know, they started this birth certificate process. Before the birth certificate, it was just more of a feudalistic system. And so basically through contract and through birth and through all these different things, we're in a feudal system. They just don't call it feudalism. But all the words, like eschid, are the same. So this was one of the true deeper meanings that I've come across, not because anything told me specifically, it's just that I've kind of figured out what has happened to us as the children of parents who were also pirated out of everything they own. Yes. They too were abandoned at birth, and their parents before them, and you know, infinity basically.
Yes.
And the whole purpose of the United States is literally to ensure that every new generation simply stays in a feudal state, a contractually feudal state, where they own no land, they have no blood consideration under law, which is everything, and so they can't be landholders, and they have to be renters or tenants, and they have to always be in debt, and performance debt, and a monetary debt, right? So we literally, you've got whole generations, one after the other, who have nothing of their own. We don't realize this. We think that everything we accumulate, all the crap, all the toys, and all the yes, imperfect titles that we get to property and the rent we pay, we think these things are ours, but they're really, truly, everything belongs to whatever entity you're operating in. In this case, Clint Richardson is you know, whatever property is owned by the state who owns Clint Richardson, right? So it's all in that estate. And I'm using their money to purchase things or conquer things, and therefore it's their property. It's I'm only an agent for my principal. That's all I am. Everything I do, just like when I'm an employee of Walmart, everything I do is for Walmart. Everything I do is for the United States. And we're all suffering from that disposition. And I love the word dis. I was reading Dante's Inferno. And the word that Dante uses for the devil or Satan is dis. It's the name of Satan. And dis basically means, you know, disposition. Well, you're separated from your position in nature. Dis-ease. Well, you're no longer at ease because you have a mortgage or you have a legal person, you know, dis that. It's always a negative connotation, meaning you're separated. And that's exactly Satan, right? It's exactly what the contractual relationship does. So think about it this way, man. We have nothing. Like, before, my, you know, or let's take these private, some of these private landholders who have big old ranches and farms, and they have their own food supply. The queen has her own forest and deer, and she only eats her own organic vegetables. All these landholders, all these people who are private, they pass everything on to their heirs, to their posterity, just like the Constitution was set up to protect. But we can't do that. And so look at us, man. We're putting on suits and ties to go work at a frickin' video store. We're doing the stupidest jobs, being paid absolutely nothing because money is debt. We're working without consideration because money is debt. We're doing absolutely nothing to benefit our own lives. We acquire no property. We can't hold land. And we have nothing. At the end of our lives, we have nothing to pass on to our children because these pirates have stolen it all. Literally, the United States is there to ensure that the pirates retain hold on all property, including land. Why do you think, then, that the general population, you, myself, and all the listeners out there who feel so frickin' empty and so out of touch with nature and everything else, why do you think we feel that way? It's because we have no land. We have nowhere to walk to. We have no land to till and work. We have nothing to inherit, and we have nothing to give. It's all been stolen. And that's what really pissed me off when I was really putting these words together and getting the whole picture in my mind of how the whole system works. And I came across that word, escheat. I highly recommend people look up cheat and escheat in the, you know, all the different, you know, there's hundreds of legal dictionaries. There's Webster's 1828 online. There's Black's Law. There's 1889 William Anderson's. Oh, so many dictionaries. Go look up that word, escheat. You will be shocked at exactly what I just said is how this system works. It's a pirate cove that exists to ensure that everything remains stolen from us, that we have no blood inheritance under the law. We have no recognizable blood or family under the law. Our family is the state or the United States, the people, quote unquote, that we pledge allegiance to. And therefore, we have nothing and we can give nothing to our children except debt.
Yes. And you can't take it with you. And they even take away your confidence. They make you think you can't do any more than what they tell you you can do. And, you know, when you think about it, like, I've lost everything about 5 times now. And I mean everything. And that's what taught me. That's what got me where I'm at right now. Because every time I stop somewhere long enough, I accumulate a ton of stuff. And it possesses me. I don't possess those things. You know, they keep me from moving. They keep me from, you know, feeling like when I lost everything, I could just go in any direction, you know, and feel like good that I don't have anything to worry about anymore to take care of or to pay for keeping it somewhere, you know. So, you know, life is all about, you know, what you can do and find here.
Like I said, man, if you think about that and you think about the way people are acting, the horrible nature of children, the horrible nature of parents, because, you know, what do you teach your children? Not to work the land, not to preserve the heritage of your entire blood generation. No. That was cheated out of you a long time ago. You have nothing to offer your children except what? Public education and the frickin' Disney Channel? Why do you think society is so falling apart? Because we have nothing. We just have this grand illusion. Yes. The great deception, as the Bible calls it, right? The grand deception. But see, there's also some sort of comfort here. And that's the waking up to me. That's the revelation, which just means revealing or apocalypse, right? That's the notion that the spiritual notion of is that, hey, you know, you never actually had any of that stuff.
That's right.
It was never yours in the first place. It was literally bogging you down, but it was never yours in the first place. And there's sort of a notion of relief when you actually consider that. Because I look around in my little basement studio here, and I'm like, I have crap in here I haven't used in 6 years, and it's just sitting there. It's like for show, right? Books. Yes. And stuff. I mean, like, why am I keeping this? Why do I have these samurai swords, for instance? Right?
Yes.
I have guns. I know why I have those, but I'm looking around. I'm going, I have so much stuff, and all of it having to do with plastic, it appears. And I'm like, you know, none of this is mine. I pretend it's mine. I go through the illusions. I pay for it with debt, with currency that's not mine. I do it in my name. I get the protections, and I'm a consumer and all that. But none of it is actually mine. I could leave it at any time if it meant being free.
Yes, and when you think about it, you could do anything you want if you just walk away from the stuff.
Well, the question becomes then, can the listener, can you, can I, truly walk away from all this crap?
Yes.
Can we walk away from government? Can we walk away from security and insurance? and can we give up our car? I mean, that's a big one for people. What do I got to drive? I got to drive for work. Well, then you cannot be free because you're commercially operating in a job that's going to require you to be a commercial person. Forget it. Just you know, deal with it. But for those that are actually truly wanting and searching for the spiritual way out, I'm sorry, you're going to have to give up truly the any notion that you have an ownership, that you have a property in anything. Again, you can go down the route where you become a slave master instead of a slave, a private landholder, prove your arms and all that stuff. But that's still not really a spiritual way out because you're just becoming sort of the bad guy, if you will. So, and I think that's an important part of it, but I don't think it's the end of the end of one's journey by any mean if you truly want to be free, because you're still going to have to pledge your allegiance to that compact of people.
So I'd like to change up a little bit because we got 15 minutes left, and you know, we're at a place in this world where the situation is there's almost no direction to walk in without, you know, running into somebody that's going to oppress you. You know, like, they've got all this violence in Mexico, we've got wars happening over in the other side, and really, how are we going to solve all of this? You know, like, how are we going to, like, call them on what they're doing to us, or to actually, you know, change it back into what the value of the people are, you know, instead of having a value on us?
I think that's the great fallacy is, you know, this nation, all nations, as the Bible say, it says all the gods of the nations are idols. In other words, your president, your popes, your... You know, they're all idols. They're all false gods. And the word God and magistrate and judge and president and mayor and governor, they all mean the same thing. They're all gods. So, first of all, we're respecting false gods. We're respecting idols. And see, the problem is all nations are created in corruptions. Again, confederation and conspiracy and combination. Those three words are all very much the similitudes. They mean the same thing, a plan between two or more people to either injure, which means to bring into law, doesn't necessarily mean to harm, or to harm, or to do, or to defraud, basically. So a plan between two or more people to bring into law or defraud, does that not describe the United States? Or
yes.
Any nation, for that matter?
Yes.
Think of it this way, you know, if I'm a foreign student, quote-unquote, I come over here from, say, Japan, and I want to go to school as a foreign student. What happens, right? Do I go to the state? No, I go through their holding company. I get a temporary residence in the United States, a visa, whatever, and then I go as a third party or as an agent of the United States. I go interact with the third party that is the state and its university, its corporation, its syndicalism. And then I can be a foreign student. But the only reason I'm there is because I'm filtered through this district, this distraint, this distress, this seizure called the District of Columbia, New Columbia, right? I never am actually interacting with just the state in any form of commerce. I always have to be a United States quote unquote citizen, national, or whatever the other little statuses are that you can be temporarily. It's never an interaction with the actual private people of the state. It's always with their fiction, their government, which is a third party to the agent of the United States, which is the principal. Learn the law of agency. It's very simple. You got an employer, an employee, and everybody that employee is in contact with is the third party to the principal. That is United States citizenship. Same as trust law. You can call it a trustor and a trustee and a third party. Same thing. Attorney is another word for agent. Whatever. All the words kind of mean the same thing. Executor and, you know, principal is United States. Agent is me. I operate a citizenship of the United States, and I deal with the state as a third party. I'm an employee of the United States, in other words, and I'm a foreigner in any state that I reside in, allowed to be there by license. That's how the whole system works. If you can get the law of agency, you can get the whole system, basically. There's a treatise on the law of agency out there that's like 1,200 pages or something. I'll tell you.
Yes, you have so much to offer.
I will tell you, man. It's your choice. It is your choice. You either do the due diligence, you know, as Horace Greeley said, a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved. Unfortunately, we have amongst us a language designed to make us illiterate, so we are not actually a Bible reading people, though we claim to be. We actually need to go and we need to search out the Bible and get its actual Latin meaning specifically, but also the Greek and the Hebrew, because we're all Romanized. We're all part of Rome, the Roman system of Christianity. So.
Well, I like to think that it should be simple so that anybody can understand it. And the real problem here is, like, we let them get away with all this trafficking of people and stuff. It's like they're really they're making life really hard for people. And most people can only see, like, an end of, you know, like, lots of people getting hurt, you know. And when we cut down the population, maybe we can fix it then. And I see it like, you know, maybe we could start, you know, helping each other instead of hurting each other. Like, maybe that's the big change in the world. You know, we were taught to hurt each other. Yes.
That is charity. I mean, call it by any other name, it's still love and charity, which is the only thing the Bible really preaches. That's living a spiritual life. So,
Well, you know, a lot of people are participating in this whole war thing, you know, where, you know, like, if they can get us all worked into a frenzy and get us mad at them, we're pretty much just doing the same thing they're doing to us, and they're not any worse than us if we do it too, you know.
Well, this is, again, you know, not my opinion, not my words, but I do appreciate the truth of the matter when I look at these words in both the English language dictionaries and the legal terms. We have a constitution. I should say we are under subservient to the people who created the constitution. They are the constituted authorities. They're the con men. We therefore can only be in one position, which is to prostitute the Constitution, right? We can only be prostitutes of their system. Another word for prostitute is mercenary, and another word for mercenary is soldier for hire, or one who kills for money. That is the truth, bare and without opinion or anything else, of what a United States soldier is. Again, not my opinion. That is simply the legal and spiritual, if you will, definition of what a soldier is, one who prostitutes and mercenaries for money.
And if you notice, you know, in the pictures and things of all the wars that are going on, that they're wearing face masks now, and you can't even tell who they are. So behind a mask, they can feel like they're getting away with something. Nobody's really recognizing who they are.
Well, you know what they're really hiding behind?
Yeah.
They're hiding behind, and this is so important for people to understand, They're hiding behind the arms of the United States. What's on their sleeve, man?
Yes,
see, when you look at the word arms, you're going to find in various dictionaries that the arms of the United States are defined as its flag and its seal. Not a gun, not its whole arsenal of weapons. No, no, no. It's flag and its seal. We're bearing the arms of our quote-unquote fathers, because our family, and we hide behind literally a license to break every spiritual and natural law under God. We literally have license to kill people who are not prostituting to the United States, who are not actually refugees in the United States, and for that matter, we can kill those too. It's just a matter of what the United States issues as our license to kill. The whole purpose of license, which is another word for anarchy, in other words, in its true sense, anarchy means lawlessness. And so if you have an organized crime or an organized chaos, if you will, that's where license comes into play, because you're giving license to break the natural, common, and law of God. That's what license is. I would even venture to say, now that I understand it, is that any license we have is in a commercial capacity, and therefore everything we do, every license we obtain, and every law that we respect in the commercial realm is specifically designed to allow us to harm each other, whether that's through competition or making more money, to harm each other legally without punishment. That's really the definition of being a United States citizen.
Yeah, what I was trying to say was that they're hiding behind these masks that are supposed to be bulletproof masks, but it makes everyone that's in the system look like mercenaries in a way, you know, where they're getting away with hiding their face from the cameras, and they feel like they can get away with the murders and the way that they're treating people. And really, they blame everything on us anyway, and we're like down to like the last 3 minutes of the show.
Well, be clear, man. They are getting away with murder.
Yes.
Literally,
yes,
they're getting away with murder. They have a license to kill. That is getting away with the ultimate crime.
Yes. I find it ridiculous, like the system that we're in right now, you know, where even in the news it looks like we're all criminals, you know, with like, you know, bandanas on our face doing this crime, you know.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, it's, again, it's all about respect, man. If you respect and you confirm your citizenship and you pay your taxes, then you're as much of a conformist and a collaborator as anybody else out there. As much as Obama and as little as, I don't know, the poorest man who pays no taxes because he's homeless. I mean, we're all basically conspirators. It's just a matter of admitting it and basically stepping out of it. That's the trick.
Yes, I agree. And that's kind of what I wanted the show to be about, is that, you know, like we're all participating in this criminal thing. And really, you know, it is against the Creator and, you know, like just harming things instead of enjoying life. And, you know, like I'm like a baby boomer, and they took away our retirement kind of because they're having this war thing. And, you know, everything in the news is kind of a lie, and most of what you see online has been scrubbed or it's a lie. And it's just total confusion these days, you know. And I know that this is not the end of the world. This is the beginning of a new way of living, because, you know, they've gotten away with as much as they can at this point, and that's about the end of it.
Well, it's you're either going to follow their new order or you're going to make your own. Simple as that.
Yes. Well, so last words, I think we're down to the last minute here. So I just want to say there is a solution. There's always a simple solution. You like trip over the easy one, and you're always looking for the hardest one, you know.
Or it's the remedy. That's the problem.
Yes. And I really think that it's in our hearts, you know, like when we stop, you know, thinking about ourselves and start thinking about everyone.
Well, I think the final word, if you will, it's a very simple question that I think each one of us has to ask ourselves, and that is very simple. Are you, am I, willing to die and be persecuted for my moral compunction, my moral belief, my religious or moral spiritual higher calling in law? That's the ultimate question. And if you're not, well, then you might as well just, you know, stay in the system. If you're one of the few and think that you want to walk that path that is laid out in the Bible, and I can't stress that enough, but you got to know what it says, which is opposite of what the church tells you, then, you know, you better start doing some homework, and you better start really considering.
Thanks so much, Clint. What a great show.
Hello, my friend.
Have fun. Talk to you sometime.
Bye.
Revolution Radio.